From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris. The sexual assault trial of basketball superstar Kobe Bryant has become a flashpoint for racial antipathy in a small Colorado town. This week, flyers turned up on lawns and windshields in Eagle, Colorado. They warned, "Don't have sex with blacks." A white supremacist group called the National Alliance acknowledged distributing the flyers in response to the Bryant case. The Lakers guard is accused of assaulting a white hotel worker in Eagle. The incident is a sign of activity from a movement at a crossroads. White supremacists have long sought to convince so-called European Americans to believe they are, as a race, threatened by a multicultural society. Now weakened by the loss of its most prominent leaders, the radical right is looking for new faces and new messages. Yet authorities say the potential for violence remains as dangerous as ever. NPR's John Burnett has the first of two reports.
Remember David Duke? In 1990, the former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan won a majority of the white vote in Louisiana in his unsuccessful bid for the U.S. Senate. The following year, he made the runoff in the governor's race. He was, at the time, the most prominent white supremacist in American politics. On April 15th of this year, Duke reported to the federal prison in Big Spring, Texas, to begin serving a 15-month sentence for tax fraud and mail fraud. According to the prosecutor, Duke milked his supporters for donations, then spent the money on himself, including trips to Gulf Coast casinos. When he gets out, he's barred from politics for 15 years. David Duke is part of a major turnover and fragmentation in the leadership of the white supremacist movement. Reverend Richard Butler, the once influential founder of the neo-Nazi Aryan Nations organization, is 85 years old and ailing. He has passed the torch to a lesser-known successor. Another casualty is Matt Hale, once the up-and-coming leader of the World Church of the Creator.
Greetings once again, my brothers and sisters of the white race. Welcome to another episode of White Revolution.
Hale no longer hosts his cable TV program because he's currently in jail on charges of solicitation of the murder of a federal judge. Hate group monitors say the biggest blow to the movement was the death in July 2002 of William Pierce, a former physics professor and leader of the National Alliance, which the FBI considers a major neo-Nazi group. Pierce's race war fantasy novel, The Turner Diaries, is thought to have inspired Timothy McVeigh to blow up the Oklahoma City Federal Building. Pierce reads here from a chapter.
Blacks who had not already vacated the premises were roughly driven into the streets at bayonet point. If they put up any resistance at all, they were shot on the spot, and the sound of this occasional gunfire helped to keep the other blacks moving along.
In the 20 or so years we have been monitoring the radical right, we have not seen such a major realignment of the radical right. It's really been quite remarkable.
Mark Potok is editor of the Intelligence Report, published by the Southern Poverty Law Center, a civil rights organization based in Montgomery, Alabama, which tracks and sues white supremacists. He wrote a recent cover story headlined, "Hate Takes a Hit."
It's not that the troops have gone away. The movement is very much alive and very much out there espousing white supremacy and anti-Semitism and so on. However, it's very unclear what groups are going to survive this period.
That uncertainty is cause for redoubled vigilance, says Scott Bean of the FBI. He's a supervisory special agent with the Domestic Terrorism Section in Washington, D.C., and a specialist on white supremacists.
Now, with the leadership vacuum at the top, we're not sure who is going to be taking control of some of these organizations. We don't know if they're going to be more radical, more violent, or less so. So it creates a period where we're really in flux. We have to pay close attention to what's going on with some of these groups.
Some figures in the radical right believe they should take advantage of this period of realignment to deal with the movement's image problem.
We love the white Aryan race. We look after the white race.
The scene is June of 1998 on the steps of an East Texas courthouse. A big-bellied man in a white robe and hood addresses a hostile crowd. After state troopers escort the dozen Klansmen to their cars through a mob of hecklers, a middle-aged man sidles up to me, makes sure my tape recorder is off, and says, "I have a problem with someone with the mentality of a house cat speaking for my whole race." The radical right's penchant for hate language, confrontation, and conspiracies has relegated it to the fringe of public discourse. In order to reach a broader audience of disaffected Americans, certain figures in the white supremacist movement are calling for new tactics and a change in tone. These days, there are fewer and fewer calls to arms to start the white revolution.
There just is no future in that.
Richard Barrett is general counsel for the Nationalist Movement, a white separatist organization based in Learned, Mississippi. He points to all the militant white supremacists who are either dead, doing time, or who've been crippled by civil lawsuits.
The lesson of all of the violence and the hate and the meanness seems to be that you have to use the system to beat the system. You have to play by the rules to change the rules.
During the 1980s and 90s, radical white separatists were in the headlines, forming secret cadres, robbing banks, and murdering perceived enemies of their race, such as Denver Jewish talk show host Alan Berg. The public face of white separatism was a scowling, tattooed skinhead giving a Sieg Heil salute. Edgar Steele, a North Idaho attorney who defended the Aryan Nations, believes that behavior is counterproductive.
The leaders in the white nationalist movement should realize they have an opportunity that if they shift their rhetoric and stop pandering to the skinheads among them and start moderating their tone and having some rationality, they can actually make a difference.
And they can possibly make more money.
The whole movement is driven on the money given by the supporters, so they are often willing to change their message if that means more money in the coffers.
Again, Scott Bean of the FBI.
The growing multiculturalism of the U.S. within the younger culture especially makes it more difficult for them to find recruits, and that has something to do with them changing their message slightly to make it more palatable and less about supremacy, more about nationalism, more about supporting America.
A kinder, gentler racist movement? Hate group monitors say not likely, but perhaps it's wising up. John Burnett, NPR News, Austin.
Tomorrow, John Burnett will look at new directions of the white supremacist movement.